began to pass, penetrating that perfect truth. The stone that was even in 100,000 years of Celtic. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
The Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. After the last talk that I did, which was a few days ago, I tried to think of a name for the talk. And I remembered a term that Reverend Master used for the precepts in the wider sense of which I was speaking of them. In that talk. And while this word would ideally be the title of that talk, I had to find another word because the word is a bit misleading. Her master spoke of what she called the permissive precepts. And remember that the ten precepts are sometimes called the ten prohibitions. Then if you think of the word permissive in that light, it's kind of the opposite of prohibition. That which, if one thing is prohibited, or one course of action is prohibited, that does not mean that another course of action is not permitted. I use the example of the first of the ten precepts, do not kill. I spoke of the fact that its wider meaning implies cultivating an attitude of reverence for life. So that it's not just about not doing something. It's also about doing something else in the place of what is not being done. So instead of something being prohibited, something is permitted, allowed, even encouraged. The problem with the word permissive is that there's a connotation of it, unfortunately, of meaning moral laxity. And of course, that is not what River Master meant by the permissive precepts. So I had to think of another term, and the term I came up with was expansive. I spoke in that talk about the spiritual meaning of the precepts being penetrated in such a way that there is an opening up or expanding into deeper spirituality. And the word expansive is a good word to imply that, convey something of that. Another possible term would be liberation, the precepts of liberation. Because the precepts free us, training the precepts free us from the bonds of greed, hate, and delusion. And being freed from the bonds of greed, hate, and delusion means that we're free to follow our own heart, to live in accordance with our own heart. Along the same lines, you could say that wider and deeper meaning of the precepts could be called the precepts of following. Because we are freed to follow our own heart, to follow our true nature. The point of all of these terms is to stress the fact that there's far more to the ten precepts than being prohibitions. If I think of the way River Master trained, and the qualities that she exhibited in her daily life, and the way in which the precepts describe that, I think that better than all of these would be simply to say that the wider and more expansive, deeper understanding of the precepts is well described by the term precepts of generosity of spirit. Her master used to say that in training ourselves, we're working at becoming more like the eternal. And the eternal is infinite love and wisdom. There's something essentially small-minded and insistent about the selfish self. And there is a great-heartedness benevolence and generosity in the eternal that really we long to be in harmony with. Now it should also be clear, and this was expressed in my last talk as well, that the precepts viewed as prohibitions do not stand against the precepts understood as the expansive precepts. And I said in the last talk that precepts understood as prohibitions are a kind of platform from which the rocket ship of deeper spirituality can launch. The emphasis in the 10 precepts in the form that we initially take them is the emphasis of the first of the 3 pure precepts, cease from evil. And Dogen says this is the source of all the laws of Buddha. This is the house of all the laws of Buddha. This is the source of all the laws of Buddha. We have to go from this platform before we can do that which is good to do. We have to cease doing that which is not good to do. The expansive precepts open up from the position of the second pure precept, do only good. And it is not my invention, but just plain old Buddhist doctrine, that the essential meaning of do only good has to do with the meditation or jhana stages of the Eightfold Path. Right meditation, right mindfulness, and right effort. In other words, what is being spoken of here is not the worldly idea of good. Worldly ideas of good are very dangerous, by the way. And there are some very, very peculiar ideas of good floating around in the world, in all societies, in all cultures, at all times. At certain times, in certain cultures, it is viewed by the majority of people as being good to treat other groups of people in abysmal ways. And as our master so often pointed out, one only needs to see the punitive ideas that imbue our justice system and the way in which people are treated in prisons and the fact that there is a death penalty to see that what many people view in our society as being good is, from a Buddhist point of view, barbaric and very non-perceptual, and expresses a really profound ignorance of how karma and rebirth work. You're actually, in the long run, generally speaking, making things much worse for everyone when you pursue an official policy of vengeance. Any policy of vengeance. This relativity of social and cultural morality does not extend to the precepts. Because the precepts are based not on people's opinions about what it is good to do and what is not good to do, but on a genuine understanding of how the law of karma and rebirth works, what it is that perpetuates greed, hate, and delusion, and what it is that leads to the cessation of suffering, the conversion of greed, hate, and delusion. And this is in no way a relativistic thing. Nor is it, however, a kind of dogmatic moral code. Because at the heart of the precepts is the understanding of the Buddha nature itself. That there is a refuge to which we can go and with which we can harmonize in our daily life if we train ourselves to do so. And in any particular situation, we may very well not know, when we go to that place of meditation, that we take refuge in our Buddha nature, what is going to be shown to be truly good to do. So you can't nail the precepts down into a kind of pat dogmatic code. It just won't work. One has to take the true spirit of the precepts to heart, long and long to be true to one's own true self. And out of that longing, one asks with genuine humility and genuine faith, please show me the way. One puts one's confusion and pain and everything one is holding on to the altar of the heart, offering it up so that the Eternal can help the spiritual need of the moment. One waits patiently, one listens, and when the sense of direction comes, one follows willingly and gladly. And one does not know ahead of time what direction one will be led in. One does know that, generally speaking, it will be described by the precepts. And at times one may find that one has to break one precept to keep a higher precept. So one has to have a truly spiritual, reverential, meditative, and kaleidoscopic attitude of mind and heart. To do this, right meditation, right mindfulness, right effort. The effort of doing what I'm describing is at times a considerable effort just to get oneself still enough to even think of doing it. Sometimes takes a great effort of will. It's easy to talk about this in the midst of the changing conditions of daily life. It can be very difficult to do. It is precisely the quandary that this puts one into, that precipitates one into the third of the three pure precepts. We take that precept in the form, do good for others. The older school of Buddhism is taken in the form, purify your own heart. That was its original form. And that really means let the Eternal get at the need, the help of the Eternal get at the need that blocks the clarity of how to proceed at the do only good level, so that one truly does that which is good to do, so that truly one does not do that which is not good to do. We're not speaking here of a kind of clarity that is an intellectual clarity. It's an intuitive clarity and certainty. One of the real tragedies was a real tragic side path that people, really sincere people who meditate, can get into is trying to achieve an intellectual clarity when what is really needed and what is really possible is an intuitive certainty. And an intellectual clarity cannot substitute for or an instinctive sense of what it is that is good to do. Sometimes the brain doesn't get it for months or years, if ever. But one simply can't wait that long, very often. So if one is not trusting one's spiritual instinct, one is lost. Another way to put this is that it is enough to know the eternal and to know that the eternal has the answers. And if one is following the eternal, then the wisdom of the eternal will manifest in one's actions, even though one may intellectually not have a clue what one is doing. So the precept, purify your own heart, cannot successfully be interpreted as get intellectually clear on what to do to help yourself and others. If you read the Kyoto Kaimon, Dogen's commentary on the precepts, you'll see that the emphasis in that commentary is on not doing that which blinds ourselves to the immaculacy that is the reality of all things. If you read Rev. Master Jiu's commentary on the precepts, you see that emphasis as well. And in addition, considerable more, a good deal more material that tells you how to do that, how to go about that. She talks about asking. She talks about listening. She talks about following joyfully and gladly. Dogen says it in a few words. Reverend Master gives a more detailed map, more detailed instruction on how to go about it. And rightly understood, both of these commentaries on the precepts are describing what I'm calling here the expansive precepts, what Rev. Master called the permissive precepts. Not only emphasizing what not to do, but helping us find our way to live life fully and magnificently. Help us find what to do. To live the life of Buddha.